The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Q. My name is Mark Bland, and America, you're welcome. That's right, you're welcome, because I'm live on the air with you right now. Mark Bland, your favorite person in the entire United States of America. We've got a big show lined up for you today, and I'm not going to hold back. Just as usual, I'm not going to hold back in the least bit. I am excited because we're going to start the show off with a bang. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the air the cracker behind the glass, my favorite guy, the sports guy for the Q, Rob Davis. What's going on, Rob?
Finally, the Rob has come back to live radio.
Yes, the Rob has come back to live radio. And this isn't the first time you've been on the show. You've been on the show before. I mean, not like...
I've been on the show before.
Yeah, not live.
Yeah, not live.
Not live, but live enough. More live than girlfriends in Kansas City. Let's just put it that way.
It's always live when I'm on. That's all there is to it.
So
you really had to go there on the Kansas City Chiefs player already.
Right, already.
I actually had
too
a discussion soon? About how tastefully I can make the joke.
Too soon.
Yeah, too soon.
It was too soon. Are you sure it was too soon? I mean, it did just happen this morning.
My first view was basically the player did exactly what most Kansas City Chiefs fans have wanted to do this season after losing 10 games.
That's a good point. The only person who has a problem with any of this is Steve McNair. The only person who's got a problem with any of this. So, all right, so let's talk about it. Welcome to the Q, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, Rob Davis, the cracker behind the glass, our sports guy. We've decided to start the show off with a little bang. You know, I've been adding a little more sports, a little more news, a little bit more general, like, formatting for the show a little bit around, though. Because I think everybody likes to, you know, I would say that all my listeners, or the majority of the listeners, are very sports savvy. But I think that there's something to be said for quite a few of them that do like sports, because the show doesn't, you know, I mean, you can get sports radio anywhere, but you're not going to get the kind of sports radio me and Rob throw at you, are they, Rob? They're not going to get this kind.
No, never.
I was
too much for other St. Louis sports talk radio stations. So
oh, yeah, you were.
I had to bring my game where it was
your A game? You had to bring your A game?
No, my A game. I'm always on my A game.
All right, so let's get into it. We got about a half an hour here where we're going to sit here together and talk some sports. So let's get into it. What do you got for us, Rob?
Well, you already busted my lead story there. Yes, there was a Chiefs player date. They have not released the name as of yet. I've been refreshing on the browser all day. Waiting
Christian Okoye.
They released the name.
Christian Okoye.
Yeah. Oh, okay, they did release it.
It was Christian Okoye.
Yeah.
The Nigerian Nightmare.
Apparently shot and killed his girlfriend and then went to the Chiefs training facility and sat in his car, and some of the players noticed that he had a gun and seemed to be a little off kilter, so they sent out Scott Pioli and Romeo Crennel out to talk to him, and he committed suicide in front of him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just got to be a blow like that. His name is Jovan Belker.
There you go.
That's his name. 25-year-old linebacker, yeah. Jovan Belker.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, this is stuff that you hear about happening on college campuses, not at football facilities.
And no.
It's just mind-blowing.
Excuse me. Now, what's really weird about this whole situation to me, and this is just my personal opinion, is you're 25 years old and you're playing football in the NFL for the Kansas City Chiefs, right? So you're probably making some decent money, more than your average person who works a 40-hour work week. All right? Because I had friends.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. I had friends. I had friends, and that's a fact, like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack, all of them. But no, I've had friends like my boy Flash Garrett, Kevin Garrett, played for the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah.
You know, DeJuan Gross was a good friend of mine. Brad Smith was a good friend of mine. Brad, he played for the University of Indiana, won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. I've had friends in the NFL. Like, they make decent money. Like, they're good people, and they make decent money. So,
well, yeah,
I don't think that there's a certain... Listen, I understand life is rough. I get it. And I'm not knocking this kid for, like, I don't know the whole situation. I know life is rough, but life is not so rough that you couldn't buy yourself a little bit of happiness beyond some dumb chick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, some people just aren't mentally prepared to deal with, you know, any life. You know, it wouldn't have mattered that he was in the NFL.
Yes, those are called conservatives.
Wow, we're already going there this early in the show.
Yep, those are called conservatives.
Yeah, but no, I like, and you know, same thing with me. I've had friends that are on practice squads and on the NFL level. I've got an idea of what game checks are, even for the lowest tier guys. Yeah, the money's there, but you know, it probably had very little, if nothing, to do with that. I'm sure there's going to be a very wild story that comes out of Kansas City on this of what was going on.
So it's really weird that he would go to the Chiefs practice facility. Or was it to the Arrowhead Stadium? Was it the Arrowhead?
Well, it was the practice facility, and the thing was is that
he probably had practice, you know, that day.
He'd already killed his girlfriend, so you got to wonder: was he going there maybe to turn himself, you know, to get with them and then turn himself in, or what was? You know, there's going to be a lot of things that come out in the next few days of what the timeline was.
Yeah, why? What was the purpose?
Yeah, exactly. Because like ESPN, there was a situation in baseball. It wasn't. Murder-suicide. It was two brothers. One of them played for the Seattle Mariners. The other one was an amateur player in Amsterdam where the one brother killed the other, stabbed him to death.
Really?
And ESPN actually just did a wonderful wonderful breakdown of the timeline of the days leading up to it and what was going on and why it happened.
Now, what happened in that situation?
A lot of it was the brother was mentally ill, severely mentally ill.
The one that was in the pros or the one that was in the amateurs?
No. The one that was in the amateurs, because basically the one that went to the pros, he felt like the one that was still in the amateurs felt like he got left behind. The kid had an attitude problem. That's one of the reasons.
That's
why
what
he
it is. Like, dude, the Gasol brothers have screwed everything up. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you're gonna go to the NBA? Oh, take me with you. Oh, look, now I start too. You see what I'm saying? Like, now everybody thinks
that
that's the way it should be. Yeah, now I get traded for you. Now it's like everybody's so happy about all that. Like, you know, and now everybody thinks, oh, well, you need to help me out. You need to do this for me. No. No.
Yeah, it's just the wild situation that people, like, you know, in these situations would do this. And like I said, there's going to be a lot of interesting stories that come out of Kansas City over the next few days. It'll definitely something we're going to have to watch because, you know, the people are going to start coming out of the woodwork of, oh, well, we kind of saw this coming and this was going on and he was saying this and doing this. And the pieces of the puzzle will come together in the next few days. Right now, though, just the horrific nature in which he ended his life, that, I mean, that's going to affect the coaching.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Like, those two guys.
But I'm sure it's going to affect the coaches.
Yeah, these two guys, they walk outside, and they basically, you know, they're thinking, okay, we're going to walk up to Javon and talk to him. Somebody says Javon's out there, some crazy stuff going on with him. So we're going to go out there and talk to him for a minute, and we'll be right back. You know, and the two guys go out to the car, and then it's like, you know, Javon, what's going on? And he's crying with the gun in his hand, you know, and he's just like, you know, and you're just like, okay, I've seen this in movies. I hope this doesn't end the way the movies ones do. You know, like, and then that happens. That just happens, and that's really sad. Let's see here. Multiple reports have confirmed that fourth-year Kansas City Chiefs linebacker, so he's been there for 4 years. He's making good money. Javon Belcher shot himself at the Chiefs practice facility this morning, allegedly after shooting and killing his girlfriend, according to CBS's Jason LaConfora. Belcher killed himself after speaking with the team's GM and head coach. So the GM was out there.
Like the that's Capioli.
Yeah, that's the big dog, like you said. Wow, man, that's crazy, dude. All right, well, you know, hopefully everything can get worked out in the city of Kansas City. Obviously, this is a not good season for them. You know, they have a horrible season on the field, and then off the field they have players killing themselves at the practice facility and stuff. Just not a good day for them at all. Did you hear about Lee Corso going nuts?
No, I must have missed it. I've had a busy morning. I kind of had my notes already kind of figured out, and then the Kansas City Chiefs.
No, I'm just asking. I'm just asking if you had heard about it. Evidently, he called the Kansas State quarterback Colin Klein, Calvin, and Chris Fowler lost it on him live on TV. It was ridiculous. Like, if you get a chance. If you get a chance.
Sean Salisbury.
Can you hear? You can probably hear anything I put over, right? Let's hit play on this bad boy right here. Listen.
They do.
Can you hear that?
Fiesta Bowl bit tonight at home. Colin Klein and K-State. I like them. They're a good football team.
Perfect. Yeah. He makes his last statement for the Heisman, Calvin Klein.
Colin. It's all good. I look at...
Yeah, Lee Corso and them, like he just... at a certain point in your career, okay? And I'm not knocking Lee Corso. Lee's a good guy. You know what I'm saying? He's been doing what he's doing for a long, long time, and he's really good at it. The problem is that at a certain point in your career, it's like, do I really want to put on the jacket again and go do this again? I've made a lot of money. I'm done. I don't need to mess up on TV anymore. Like, when is enough enough, Michael Jordan? Huh? That's the question. When is enough enough?
You can't call out MJ. No. First rule of the sports segment, you can't call out MJ. He's got enough said.
Well, MJ was good. Yeah, he was good. He did his thing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like it's arguable he's the best pro athlete of all time.
Yes.
It's very arguable. Right. I mean, like, there's really nobody else. I mean, you could claim, like, Tiger Woods and things like that, but, dude, golf's easy. I mean, golf takes a lot of eye-hand coordination. You got to put the ball in the hole, and I get it. It's difficult as far as, like, but it's not difficult like it's hard for the person to do. It's difficult because of the way that the game is set up. You know what I'm saying? But it's an even playing field across the board, and you're not really putting in all that much effort as a golfer. Would you agree?
There's a lot more physical effort. I mean, golfers have a history of back problems. The putting and the torque that you put on the back as a golfer is a lot more difficult for people to understand that haven't done it on a regular basis and have dealt with the pain.
Dude, there are people that work at facilities that make bags of dog food where the people bend over and grab a 50-pound bag of dog food and haul it around over to a pallet every single day, 8 hours a day. These dudes bend over three or four times and just stand there for like a minute, and then they putt.
But there's a lot more torque involved on the lower back, and torque is what, whenever you're lifting things at a facility like what you're talking about, the torque is what they're trying to keep you away from. And in golf, they seek higher and higher levels of torque on their back, and that's what normally ends up slowing down a player's career. But no, I think Tiger's in the discussion with Michael Jordan. I still put Willie Mays up there in that group for what he was able to do in baseball, because I'm sorry, as far as I'm concerned, baseball's still the most difficult sport there is. We won't get too in depth with that. But,
well, we're not going to be able to. I mean, to stand in right field and shag one ball a game, I could do that for, you know, $2-3 million a year. That's pretty easy. Like, there's really nothing to it. Like, one guy hits one ball towards you the entire game. Then the rest of the time is getting up there and trying to hit the ball. Like,
I can strike. Two hardest things to do in sport.
Bro, I can strike.
Two hardest things to do in sport.
And you know what? There's a lot of guys that sit on those benches, and you know this, Rob, that strike out damn near almost every time they step up to that plate. So guess what? I can do that too. I can stand at a plate, take four balls, lose every time, and then go shag a ball once a game in right field. Literally, and make $3 million. I could do that. You could do that.
The two most difficult skills in sports, still to this day, and I don't care what argument you want to try and make, are hitting or squaring up a round ball with a round bat, and the second most difficult is trying to throw it past somebody. And those are still the two most difficult individual skills in sports.
To throw a ball past somebody? To
throw, yes.
Why would, like, a football player trying to get over to a middle linebacker?
No, I'm saying a pitcher trying to get out a hitter.
It's the second most
difficult skill in sports, because these guys, with the video technology they have, every pitcher's repertoire is known by every hitter that faces them. They know what pitches like that like throwing certain counts. It is it's the second most difficult in my eyes. Second most difficult talent, individual skill in sports.
I would say
professional sport.
What do you think the most difficult professional sport is? Before we take this break,
baseball, definitely.
No way.
As far as the individual skills that go into it, as a hitter, you have less than 0.3 seconds to decide whether or not you're going to swing at a ball that could be going up to 100 miles an hour.
I guarantee you that a ping pong ball goes faster past a ping pong player than a baseball goes past any baseball player staying at a plate with a bat. So the eye-hand coordination and speed required. Ping pong's what's the old adage? It's a sport. A sport requires what? A ball, right? Has to have a ball?
Yes.
Ping pong sport. I guarantee you that a guy taking a slam off a ping pong paddle, that ball's going way faster than a baseball ever was. And the eye-hand coordination legitimately is, you have to have it. In spades, you have to have more eye-hand coordination for a ping pong ball than you have to have for a baseball. By
but
far.
But that's the only skill you have to have.
No, no, no. You got to have agility too, bro. There's no just standing up there and waiting for 3 minutes with a bat laying on your shoulder for the guy to pitch the ball.
No, bro.
No, no, no. These dudes are moving like a tennis player. You're moving. You're moving. You're constantly moving. Like you, okay, hey, listen. This is an arguable, we're going to take a quick break, but this is an arguable point. If and only if, Rob, baseball batters from now on, when they get up into the batter's box, they start jogging in place as they swing for the ball. Then we'll have an argument of ping pong versus baseball.
Yeah.
Yep, I know, you're just going to go, gosh, he brought in another sport with a ball. Oh. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break here on the queue. When we come back, more with the cracker behind the glass, Rob Davis. Get that sports ready. Rob will be back right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. My name, of course, is Mark Bland. A little Red Hot Chili Peppers there to bring us back in. Venice Queen, and on the phone with us right now, as he has been this entire half hour, our friend, the cracker behind the glass, Rob Davis. We started off with a news story about the Kansas City Chiefs linebacker who decided to take his own life along with his girlfriend's life. And so what else you got on tap for us, Rob?
Okay, big NBA news today.
Was there?
The NBA came out. Yes, there was.
Does the NBA really matter in St. Louis? Much like, well, I mean, this show's a national show, so there's a lot of people in other cities that are listening. So NBA is probably really big in their town. I actually had a discussion this past week with some people from Cleveland, and they were railing on something that had to do nothing to do with the NBA, but more with like high school football or college football and sports and stuff like that. And I was like, well, we know there's at least one person from the state of Ohio who just doesn't like you guys when it comes to professional sports. So we're good.
All right. The big news out of the NBA today, the Spurs were fined for sending their three stars, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili, back to San Antonio before playing the Miami Heat.
Why would they be fined for that? Like, that's their decision to send players wherever they feel to send them, isn't that?
Well, the commissioner's office decided that this is something that hurts the NBA product because, of course, you know, TNT had this as a marquee match of San Antonio versus Miami, and when you take the three stars out of San Antonio, it just becomes, you know, another game. And, you know, Greg Popovich has been known for this. He's rested his stars a lot because he does have an older roster, and he's managed an older roster probably better than any coach in history in knowing that you know, when they have back-to-back games, when they have long road trips, he needs to get his guys rest.
Okay, so this is a weird story, okay? And the reason I'm cutting you off, not because I think that there's something more to this that we can discuss for a few minutes here. You know what I'm saying? And we only got a couple more minutes. I'm going to keep you over a little longer than I normally do, if that's okay, if you can stick with us past the next break. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, so check it out. Here's the thing. Where is this line between, okay, you're a sports team within this league, and you decide how you want to run your sports team, and if you choose to run it like crap and lose and not put up good numbers and not win a national championship or a world championship or whatever the hell it is, that's your choice. That's your problem. I'm not in charge of making sure that butts are filling the seats in your city. But in this case, it seems like, oh, the NBA is like taking it personal that like superstars aren't on the floor. So it's not like a representation of the league. Where's that gray area in your opinion, Rob, where they need to step away from this and stop trying to micromanage?
Well, I said this, you know, before in one of the previous episodes, I have all the respect in the world for David Stern.
Right.
I think he's an amazing commissioner. He's done a lot to create the NBA as a product.
He's done a good job.
He's done an excellent job. And that's what these leagues have to understand. What I've always felt like baseball has not gotten is that this is a product for entertainment.
Is it? That's the problem. When it was first started, it wasn't a product specifically for the sake of entertainment. Like pro wrestling is for the sake of entertainment. See my point?
And Vince McMahon is the one that taught. Yeah, I understand that. Vince McMahon is the one that taught, and that a lot of these guys have learned from the things that he's done with professional or sports entertainment. And understand that we're not just competing for the competition dollar, we're competing for entertainment value.
Right, but
and
the problem is that gray area. But that's that gray area. You know, with Vince has actors to an extent. Let's be honest. I'm a former pro wrestler. Yeah. Vince has guys that are designed to look like sports athletes out there doing athletic things. I mean, that's legitimately a sport. They really are tired. They really do sweat. Like, that is real movement. That they are really wrestling. But at a certain point, it's like, you know, that gray area between what is real and what is fake. That exists in the WWE. That's not supposed to exist in pro sports. Like, it's all real.
And it's all real, but it's still the matter of you're competing for the entertainment dollar. Because, you know, somebody can choose to spend this $50 to go see a San Antonio Spurs game, or, you know, bring it up, or they can spend that $50 to go see a WWE event. Or they can go spend it to go see, you know, of course, hockey's out of there now, but there's a lot of markets out there competing for the same dollar, and it all falls into entertainment. And David Stern has understood that better than any sports commissioner that has been in my lifetime for any of the Big Four. But the problem is that Greg Popovich is a well-tenured coach. He knows what he's doing. He's handled this roster very well as Tim Duncan's age and as Tony Parker's age. He knows what he has to do to keep his guys healthy. And I do feel like he overstepped in signing. I think that maybe, putting out that the NBA didn't appreciate it, you put out your little press release and you let people speak on it.
Robbo.
You don't find a team for that.
Rob, give me 1 second. We're going to take a quick break here on the show. We're at the bottom of the hour, CBS News. When we come back, more with the Cracker Behind the Glass, Rob Davis. We're going to let him finish up talking about this. I'm sorry. We just caught that last break long because of the article that we talked about right off the bat. By the way, I got something to plug to everybody, so we'll be back on the queue right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, joined today by, nobody better than the cracker behind the glass, one himself, my main man, Rob Davis. Rob, so we were talking about before the break there at the bottom of the hour, we were talking a little bit about our friend, Vince McMahon. Are you a big pro wrestling fan?
I'm not big. I'm more on the history side of it, but I grew up like most kids in my era, you know, idolizing Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and all that. And I still like to check in on it from time to time.
Yeah, we've interviewed a few people on the show, and it's been really fun. You know, I enjoy pro wrestling, being a former pro wrestler myself. I've gotten a chance to run around the good old United States, traveling around, wrestling in different cities, and having a good time on the independent side when I was coming up in the game. So it's a fun thing, but I understand the difference. I kind of from that understand the life of a pro athlete to an extent. It's a lot less daunting for most pro athletes, since with professional wrestling, literally we had matches in other cities every single weekend. Now, they do that in sports too, but the difference is that, like, you know, there was never a homestand for a professional wrestler. Like, you might have one match once a month in your own, like, hometown where you're originally from, but you're always on the road. There is never there's very few homestands, whereas with professional baseball, boxing, soccer, things like that, you could be doing it in your hometown every time that you do it, or quite a few times per year. 50% of the time, you're going to be in your own hometown. So you get off of playing on a Friday night at the ballpark, go home. Come back on Saturday, go home. Come back on Sunday, go home. You know what I'm saying? Well, like, you don't have that option.
Not all ball players live. You know, they live during the season where they play. Generally, you know, Cardinals.
Right, but they're still stationary 50% of the time. Is what I'm saying. They might move to a different city to live in St. Louis, but during those homestands, they're just down the street from their house.
Yeah.
Whereas a pro wrestler is never by their house ever.
Yeah, the stress on professional wrestlers, I've always said, is ridiculous. The number of nights on the road, the things that they've done, you know, that they've done to get there. You and I actually got into this off air last week when we were talking about the steroids in baseball, and, you know, the prevalence and the expectation of steroid use in professional wrestling for decades.
Right. Exactly.
And it wasn't regulated. It was basically, it wasn't even a quiet behind the scenes thing.
It was well
known, and yeah, I mean, Vince pushed it. Everybody knew that.
All right, so we're talking a little sports today, and Rob, when it's all said and done, what do you think the honest impact and this is me throwing you for, this is more me throwing, not for a loop, but asking you just your honest opinion, okay? What do you think the impact is going to be of this hockey strike when it's all said and done? Now it's getting deep. It's been a while. The season's been canceled for a while, but, like, they're still going to the table, and they still keep coming out with stories about how they're all walking away from the table. Nothing's getting changed. Nothing's being worked on. Nothing is coming out of these talks outside of this season that has already been canceled. And we know what it did the last time that they had the strike, in the 93, 94 season, somewhere around there. So,
oh, no, it was a bit more recent than that. They lost the season five years ago.
Yeah, right after Tampa Bay won the title, right?
Yep. They lost an entire season after that.
Yeah, that was 2004, I think. So anyway, my question at that point is like, where do you think they stand on this? In your opinion, how much harm does this do to the sport of hockey, or at least the NHL?
Well, the NHL, as we know it, is dead. It's dead and gone. I mean, it's already been passed up in popularity, you know, by NASCAR. And I mean, honestly, right now, I think that a lot of sports like tennis and all that would pass up in popularity just because there's no dependability in the league.
Do
you
think that there's
two seasons?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
When you lose two seasons in a 10-year span, that is just, you know, you have wrecked the product.
Who do you think? And who do you think has hurt their product more? Okay, this is a great one. This is a good one. I need an honest answer from you. Gary Bettman in the NHL or Don King for boxing? Who has hurt their product more?
Boxing hurt itself more than Don King could. I mean, Don King definitely has had his hand in the demise of boxing. You know, and there's, I can't remember the boxer's name that actually just came out and basically put him on blast because he's been at Don King's camp for several years and had offers for title fights that King wouldn't let him take.
Oh, is that the St. Louis guy? Is that the St. Louis guy?
Oh, God, I'm not even sure where he's at. It's not, you're thinking about, oh, God, the guy from out of St. Louis I know has two titles already.
I'm talking about Ryan Coyne.
That might be it.
Yeah, he's from St. Louis, too. St. Charles area, white guy.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was about to say. It was a white guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he put Don King on blast about what, you know, because he actually has a title fight lined up now, and Don King's trying to keep him from getting it, even though he's outside of his camp now. King has done more to affect individual boxers, I think, than the overall product. What killed boxing was UFC.
No. I disagree. As the, you know what I did over there for Fox. You know I was the MMA guy. You ran my board many times. Okay,
yes.
Let's throw this card out there for what it's worth. Okay, MMA did not kill boxing. MMA put the final nail in the coffin for boxing. What killed boxing was the inability of the promoters to get together within decent and reasonable amounts of time, i.e., example given, Floyd Mayweather versus our friend, Manny Pacquiao, within a decent relative amount of time to put together big title fights when that's all that's really on the table and that's all that needs to be done. They just refused to play ball with each other, and they were doing it before the Mayweather-Pacquiao arguments. They were doing this for years before that. They wouldn't put guys up. Like, the last great heavyweight champion you've had in the United States of America was Lennox Lewis. That's it. Like, you know about the two brothers from Germany and Russia or whatever they are, the two Klitschko brothers. You know about them. But other than that, like, the last truly great champ that people actually wanted to see box was Lennox Lewis. Past that, it's done. Like, there's nothing. So,
and see, even by the time Lewis won the title, honestly, I had checked out on boxing because UFC was already starting to make its way up.
Exactly. And the beauty of UFC was the fact, and this is what put the nail in the final coffin, was the fact that every 4 months, a Brock Lesnar would fight. It wasn't all, oh, you got to do a drug test Olympic style, and oh, you got to do this, you got to pee, and you're drinking your pee, and blah, blah. No. It was none of that. It was, hey, Brock, do you want to take on Cain Velasquez? Yeah, I'll take on Cain Velasquez. All right, it's signed. 4 months from now, you guys are fighting each other. Done. In the books. There's no arguments about it. That's the beauty of UFC. So
I think a lot of it comes down to is the difference. You got all these separate governing bodies in boxing.
True.
The governing body of UFC is Dana White.
Yes.
The buck stops with Dana White. And Dana White, I've always felt like this, is that he's a fan first.
Well, yeah, and he's a former boxer. So he knows the kind of BS that goes on in boxing, and he refused to allow that to happen in UFC.
And when the only knock I could ever put on Dana White, and I think we got into this one time back in the day, and they had Dana White going head-to-head on ESPN one night about this with one of the boxing guys. And the boxing guy called him out. He said, and this is when Brock got his title shot. He goes, in boxing, you would never see a guy that's 2-1 get a world title shot.
Well, of course not. But see, but here's the thing. Here's an argument I got against boxing for UFC and for MMA. In MMA, you're never going to see a guy go brain dead without having the ability to tap out. But you will see a referee continue to send a guy out to the middle of the ring to get its face beat in like Boom Boom Mancini did. Boom Boom back in the day where he killed the guy. And he kept, like, the video, you see the video. And I've talked about this on the show before. You see the video, he's looking at the ref and he's like, dude, and the ref's like, keep going. Because if they stop fighting, the ref can deduct a point or the ref can, like, punish them for not engaging. And he's looking at the ref like, dude, I can't keep hitting this dude. And he's like, keep doing it. And it's like, okay, at least in boxing or at least in MMA, the boxer has the ability to tap out. The opponent has the ability to tap out. You know, and there was the famous Roberto de Man no mas. But that was more of a decision after the corner. You know, the corner was like, no mas.
I mean, at some point, I would not be surprised. It wouldn't be from submission. It'd be one of the good fights where it's going to be a stand-up fight. It could happen in UFC the same way it happened in boxing. That it's two stand-up fighters, and they're going for it. UFC refs are pretty good at breaking things up. And, they're very good at spotting when a guy's just done.
It's going to happen.
They could come where that happens in UFC, too.
No, it's going to happen eventually. Somebody is, like, it literally has nothing to do with them not being prepared. It literally comes down to happenstance and coincidence. There's going to be an MMA fight, and it's going to just be the right punch at the right spot, regardless of how tough this individual is, and it's his time to go, and it's going to happen in the middle of that ring. It's going to happen. Yep. Like, it's just going to happen, you know? And there's nothing you can do about it, and, you know, but everybody's going to jump up and down, and, oh, it's brutality and this, that, and the other. Yeah, it's been going on for years now.
And I'll probably be one of these tomato can fighters like Liddell or somebody like that can't take a punch anymore, that just decides to go out for one more fight, or Forrest Griffin even, extending his career.
All right,
it's going to happen to me, one of these older tomato can guys that's just taking one too many punches.
So your argument is going to be definitely that NHL is dead. NHL is dead we know it.
Well, and that's actually another good point to bring up is, NASCAR's passed them and UFC's passed them. I mean, think about the last time you saw a Buffalo Wild Wings that was packed for a Stanley Cup playoff game.
Not. But I also think that's not fair to MMA. You know, and that's not fair to hockey, because hockey is really like baseball and football and all that. It's your hometown team, and if your hometown team isn't in it, you really just don't care. Whereas with UFC, it's more of a global thing. You could be in any city in the United States or the world, and you're a fan of that fighter specifically. It doesn't matter what city you're in, you know. But if you're a Blues fan, you're just not going to go watch the Buffalo Sabres take on the Philadelphia Flyers in the NHL Finals. It just ain't going to happen. Not that that is possible anyway. But regardless.
But I mean, in Buffalo, do you think all the places that were showing that game were sold out? I doubt it. Even with a finals game, there's not the impact that UFC and NASCAR bring to the table now. They have clearly passed the NHL as far as national and worldwide
popularity.
Do you
think this gives... Now, this is my last question before the break. Do you think that this gives the game of soccer and football with the U, do you think it gives them the open to maybe take up that fourth place spot? Honestly?
No, like I said, as far as sports go... NASCAR's already taken that spot, and UFC started to push NASCAR as far as popularity goes.
I don't know, man. NASCAR always seems like a tangent. It's like, I'm a baseball fan, and I watch NASCAR. You know, kind of like pro wrestling. I watch football, and on Monday nights, I watch pro wrestling. Like, NASCAR's always seemed like a tangent sport to me anyway, like WWE. It's not a main focus sport. I would always think baseball, football, hockey, basketball, those are your main focus sports, and then you have side sports that you're just a big fan of, like pro wrestling, NASCAR, things like that. You know, For my dad, it's fishing.
Well, look at SportsCenter. That's the way you have to judge it. Look at SportsCenter. NASCAR gets a lot of heavy coverage. There's a lot of big names that are out there that are getting major, major deals that are on major. I mean, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is everywhere you look.
Hey, I'm friends with Carl Edwards. Know him personally.
There's the national awareness is there. SportsCenter has the awareness of it. And that's why I still put UFC behind NASCAR is because, they'll report the results of a big UFC card on ESPN, but they still have not come to the deal where they can actually show as much as they do for the other sports.
Now, see, that's only in the U.S., though. That's only in the U.S. Over in Europe, ESPN is the station for MMA, and they show all UFC pay-per-views for free on their ESPN over in Europe.
Yeah. And that's where I'm saying where they've got the national, and that's where NHL always kind of had the advantage was, yeah, it's not a huge American sport. You know, it was a big American sport, but Canada and the European countries carried it. Because they, it's like soccer where it never quite caught on as heavily in the U.S. as it caught on around the world. And soccer still hasn't broken into the U.S. market. I mean, you know, they brought David Beckham into the biggest soccer market in the country, and soccer still, you know, they show it for 5 minutes on SportsCenter. It's probably never going to break through in the American market the way that these other sports have taken hold.
You know, what's really weird is every time you come on my show, we end up talking about sports more than we end up doing the actual show. I'm supposed to keep this to 10 minutes. 10 minutes! Well, you were supposed to have a half an hour today, but it never works out that way. I swear to God. Is there anything else you got for us to finish up with, sir?
Oh, NFL quarterbacks. It's a bad year to be an NFL quarterback, especially if you're the ribs.
Okay.
This week, Big Ben Roethlisberger's already been declared out. Michael Vick is out for the week. Tim Tebow is in questionable status. Kevin Kolb is also out for the week. All of them, at least one of their injuries, has to do with their ribs, except for Vick. Vick's just the concussion case at this point. But just real quick, Michael Vick, the question falls to him is that is he really not healthy? The Philadelphia Eagles are in a horrible shape. They're playing their rookie quarterback, Nick Foles. They've already cut a defensive end. The names escape me off the top of my head. They're playing for next season. They need to keep Vick out from underneath center, and this is the easiest way for them to do it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Rob Davis, the cracker behind the glass. You want to stick around with me for the next few minutes here and then wax poetic before we let you go at the top of the hour? Is that cool with you?
That sounds good.
All right, Rob. So let's switch gears. Out of sports, we have to get out of sports, and being the political show that we are, let's talk a little bit about this fiscal cliff. Do you know anything about the fiscal cliff, Rob?
What I've heard on the radio.
Okay. let me help everybody out there. I'm going to give you my opinion on the fiscal cliff, and I think everybody's going to understand this a lot better when I'm done. Okay, because it's ladies and gentlemen, it's not hard to figure out. It's not hard to figure out this whole fiscal cliff thing. Now, for most people, and let me make sure that I got some strong information here. I want to make sure that I got the right stuff up on my screen. But for most people, I don't think that they understand the basis of the fiscal cliff. Like, I don't think to them they understand what the input of the fiscal cliff is. The fiscal cliff is just words. Rob, do you get that?
Well, now that I'm looking at it, it's words, but it's also policy.
It's words, but it's policy, but it's not policy. It's just words trying to decide or just it's as if we changed the words from the Super Bowl, calling the Super Bowl like the World Championship game for professional football is called the Super Bowl. What if we came up with another name for Super Bowl instead of Super Bowl, and one year we just called it this instead? It's still the Super Bowl. It's still the final game for the World Championship of Football, but we're just going to change the name and the way it looks. That's where the fiscal cliff words come in, where they call it the fiscal cliff. These are typical things that would run out and would change anyway on a year-to-year basis. This year, they've decided to give it a name for that exact point at when everything goes out of goes into expiration, okay? So, the fiscal cliff means really not that much to the people of the United States. And like I said, I'm a mod lib. I'm a moderate liberal. So, guys, I understand very well this whole fiscal cliff thing to an extent. What we have is this need to believe that if the fiscal cliff, if we go over the edge of the fiscal cliff, if the midnight hour approaches and the bell strikes 12, on that day, the world is going to change economically forever. No. No, it's not. It's not going to change economically forever at all. What's going to happen, very simply, Rob, in the rest of the world, and by the way, if you'd like to join in, 636-356-9266 on the phone. That's 636-356-9266. Also, don't forget to visit theqnow.com, theqnow.com. Old shows, new shows, stuff with Rob on it, stuff with me on it. You'll enjoy it. but you can find out a little bit more about what I'm talking about. The fiscal cliff isn't going to make no changes to anyone's life. The only difference is that in 2012, day-to-day life is more expensive than it was in the 1990s. See, what's going to happen is we're going to hit midnight. Like I said, the bell's going to strike 12. We're going to have this fiscal cliff thing happen, and there's going to be a bump in taxes across the board. Those tax rates are not going to blow us to some unheard of, ungodly large tax hike that you've never seen in the history of this. No, actually, it's just going to send all of our pricing and structure and everything back to the way it was in the mid to late 90s. So when gas was a dollar in the mid to late 90s, Bill Clinton was president, the tax rates that you would be paying after this fiscal cliff are the same as 1998. The exact same. You've already been down this road before. You just didn't know, and they didn't have no cool word like fiscal cliff to let you know that it existed and all that crap. Now, does anyone, like Rob, do you want to really pay $2,000 more a year in taxes?
Oh, I don't think I can afford to.
Okay, fair enough. I don't think a lot of people can afford to in 2012 with $3.50 gas. In 1999, with 99 cent gas, I think everybody could afford to. I think no one can afford to now. And the problem that we have, ladies and gentlemen, is we have John Boehner and the conservatives telling everyone, we're going to compromise, we're willing to compromise, we're willing to compromise, we're willing to compromise. But they were such D-bags. They were such a-holes to Barack Obama over the last year and a half during his campaign to become reelected as president of the United States that he's got a bitter taste in his mouth now. After the 2010 Tea Party thing, where they came in and they literally told him to his face on very typical basic economic policies that had been just literally written into law by Bush, who was a conservative, and other presidents over the last 30 to 40 years, we're going to fight you tooth and nail on all of these. We're not going to give it to you easy like Reagan and like Clinton and like everybody else who was a president and also had it. No, no, no. We're going to F with you every chance we get. And they told him that to his face. And then they did it because he really didn't believe that they would do it. He thought, okay, that's campaigning, that's rhetoric. No, they did it. And then they did it to him for a year while he was running to be reelected as president. So now he's bitter. And you did it to yourselves. So now when you go sit at the table with him, he is the most powerful guy with all the veto power. And you want to play games? I think it's time for John Boehner to start crying again. Because he's really good at getting on national TV and crying like a little baby. Like, openly weeping. Have you ever seen that, Rob?
No, I have not.
John Boehner literally gets on to podiums in front of news and press and everyone else. And if a certain thing strikes him as emotional, he literally starts crying. Wiping tears away. I'm sorry. Like, literally. Like, he just lost his daughter. Like, she was just kidnapped, and he's crying about it. No, no, no. We're talking about basic economic policies. This man is the Speaker of the House. And he cries. Far be it from me to take away the ability for a man to cry in the right situation. You know what I'm saying? But come on, guys. So he's bitter now. Barack Obama's bitter. And he's not going to let you just walk on him. He's angry at you. And you earned it. You deserve it. You went out of your way to tell everybody how tough and cool you guys were. And how you're going to put your foot down and bring America back. Patriotism. Boom. You're not bringing nothing back. It's already here. You just don't want to accept it for what it's worth. And you think that there's something better. Well, yeah, back in the 1800s where you wish you lived and where you wish you were born. Great. That's amazing. Congratulations. But we live in 2012. Different world, different time. 50 years ago, things were great, weren't they? Weren't they, Rob? 50 years ago, things were great, weren't they?
It was long before my time. I have no idea.
50 years ago. 60s. Hockey existed. I'll tell you that. They were playing hockey. Montreal Canadiens were probably on their fourth decade in a row of winning Stanley Cups at that time. Literally. What do they got, like 36? 36 champions. In fact, if I remember correctly, I did some research on the Montreal Canadiens. I think that in the year 1940, or the decade of the 1930s or the 40s, they played in every single Stanley Cup and only lost one in like a decade period. 10 straight years, one loss every single year in the Stanley Cup. That's impressive. Talk about a dynasty. That's why people love them in hockey. Am I correct? Come on, Rob. You're the sports guy.
Okay. come on, you know the hockey. Hockey's not my thing. The business side of it I get. Hockey, I just have never understood a bunch of Canadian guys chasing around a black thing on the ice.
So I just want to rest you assured, Rob, and the rest of the United States and all the fans that listen to The Q every single week. And by the way, thank you so much for listening to The Q. Thank you for making it the number one moderate liberal entertainment talk show. Thank you for giving Rob a place to talk and do his sports business. Thank you for being there for me and giving me an opportunity to be successful at what I do. Thank you. But it's not going to be the end of the world. The money's going to only drop back to the way it was in the 1990s. Maybe it's going to help us. Maybe it's going to hurt us. I don't know. I am not like a conservative. I'm a moderate who tends to lean liberal. So I'm not going to tell you what I think is going to happen and then beat it into your head that I know for sure that that's going to happen. Because I don't. I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm willing to let the people that do this for a living attempt to talk to each other. But right now, Barack Obama's bitter. So I would assume that if you're a conservative in the House of Representatives, you ought to kind of bend a little bit. Play along a little bit to open yourselves up because you still got three more years with this guy. You got the rest of this year, but then you got three more full years straight, boom, with this dude before we even get to 2016 and ramping up for that election. And in those 3 years, he doesn't have to he doesn't have to worry about re-election. It's done. It's done for him. So why don't we work together instead of trying to like put our foots down? He wants to keep the Bush tax cuts. He wants to keep them, but you're going to have to make some concessions on your end. So you want your Bush tax cuts that you're so proud of? Make some concessions. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Rob Davis, Cracker Behind the Glass. Thank you so much, Rob, for coming on The Q today.
And, thank you for having me.
And doing sports. I know you weren't very involved right there at the end, but I appreciate you coming on the show, doing some sports, and we are going to make sure that every single week, Rob has a home for at least 10 minutes to talk about the big news stories and sports stories that that are on the plate for him. So thank you once again, Rob. Is there anything you want to plug or tell anyone about?
No, we're good. We're working towards it. I got some things in the works. We'll get it in future weeks.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Rob Davis, the Cracker Behind the Glass, thank you for doing sports today, sir. I will talk at you later. Ladies and gentlemen.
TBG out.
You got it, man. All right. We're going to... Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we're going to finish out The Q for this week. My name is Mark Bland. Check out theqnow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to The Q. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and you guys are rolling with me on the blowtorch of the Midwest, KYRO 1280 AM. Woo! WestplexNewsTalk.com every single Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. as long as there's no professional baseball, football, sports, or anything like that. Other than that, check the Breaking Point blog or my Facebook page, facebook.com/playingmusic, which is my personal, or facebook.com/theqnow, theqnow, plus twitter.com/theqnow. That's where you can find that, or at Mark Bland. That's me on Twitter. All the good stuff right there, and having a good time here on KYRO today, talking a lot about quite a few different things, including the death of the girlfriend and the professional football player from the Kansas City Chiefs when we had Rob Davis on just a little bit ago. But regardless of that, we move on with some of the discussions of things that are going on in the world as we know it. Now, real quick, a nice little plug I want to give is to Deluxe Magazine. You can find them at DELUX-MAG, deluxe-mag.com. That's where you can find Deluxe Magazine. And the reason I'm bringing them up is today is the day of my first published article debuting in one said Deluxe Magazine. The article is called A Time for Real Change. I discuss what has to happen for us when it comes to the election and voting process to take things to the next level. And I think that if you get a chance, you should go out to deluxe-mag.com. And they have clickable version of the issue live on the internet. But you can also go to it at Schnucks and Deerbergs and all your places around the United States, your different newsstands that sell magazines. You can buy a Deluxe Magazine there. It is a nationally syndicated magazine.
kind of like a syndicated radio show. And you can get a hold of it and read A Time for Real Change, my first published article. Thank you to Keith Griffin and all the guys over at Deluxe Magazine for giving me this opportunity. This is a monthly thing. Every single month I'm going to be doing an opinion piece that is going to show up in Deluxe Magazine. And I think I know where I'm going to go with the next one. I'm not 100% sold on it for sure, but I think I know where it's going. One of the things I wanted to talk about here on the show was, I don't know if anybody out there, my dad hit me to this. I started recording them and watching them slowly, but there's a set of shows on History Channel called The Men Who Built America is the name of the show. It's on either TLC or History. I think it's on History Channel. And I think it's America, the Story of Us. It's kind of like an offshoot of that, because I saw America, the Story of Us, which is like literally from the days the Pilgrims set for the United States to land at Plymouth Rock all the way up through the computer age in 2010, 2011, 2012 when that came out a couple years ago. Great. It was a great, great show. Kind of teaching people in a very entertaining way about the history of the United States and America in general. Well, I think this is an offshoot called The History, The Men Who Built America. And it's shot in the same style, very cinematic. You know, it doesn't move along like a documentary in the state of that. It's more of like a show that has, like, you know, somebody talking in between. But, you know, scene to scene, the interaction of these individuals and how they handled each other and how they reacted to each other during their time builds. And it talks about the Vanderbilts, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, Henry Ford, and a few other things that were going on literally from around the end of the Civil War in the 60s, 1860s, all the way up through, I would say, around probably the 1920s or later. Potentially. I haven't gotten that deep into the show, but one of the episodes I just did see was about J.P. Morgan. Okay. J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan was a staunch conservative. A staunch conservative. Businessman, rich, smart, conservative. That's what he was. You can try to sit there and say, you're just a lib. Like, you can do the typical conservative thing. Libtard, blah, 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 name call, blah, 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 no substance, blah, blah, blah. Like, we get it. We get it. But hear what I'm saying. Stop trying to take a shot at me personally and listen to what I'm physically saying on the show. J.P. Morgan was a staunch conservative. But our country was in need of economic help at one point in history. And he literally loaned the United States of America the money. He bailed out the United States of America. J.P. Morgan bailed out the United States of America. One individual had enough money to bail out our entire economy when it was in a depressionary moment in its past. Now, a few years ago, George Bush, in his last term as president of the United States, he threw down a $700 million bailout. And then right after that, Barack Obama took office, and he did a couple more bailouts. And the entire time that these bailouts were happening, all I kept hearing from conservatives was, "This is BS. I can't believe they're doing this. We don't need bailouts. That's just them wasting our money again. Blah, 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 blah." But my question is the reasoning behind us bailing out these industries a couple of years ago, a few years ago with Barack Obama and George Bush, the reasoning and the idea behind why we did it was the exact same reason and idea behind why J.P. Morgan did it. The reason is because J.P. Morgan knew that the people of the United States were good, hardworking Americans, and that he understood that they needed to be able to pay for the electricity that he was selling with General Electric. They needed to be able to pay for the oils that John D. Rockefeller was selling. They had to be able to pay for the steel that Andrew Carnegie was providing them to build cities with. And without any money to do that, their industries legitimately would fall by the wayside because there was just no one who would be able to pay for their stuff. so he couldn't continue to make profit. Same reason that George Bush and Barack Obama did it. This country requires food on the table and things to keep moving in a forward progression to offset so that there is not a complete collapse and failure of our system. Now, whereas J.P. Morgan did it for a more selfish reason, nothing against that. He was the person with all the money. It was selfish reasons why he chose to give that money to the United States government, because he was going to benefit in the private sector heavily from the monies that they would use as bailout money. The same conservatives in 2008 are screaming at the top of their lungs that they can't believe that somebody would do this. This isn't a conservative move. It was totally a conservative move. J.P. Morgan proved that it was a conservative move. The only difference is it wasn't a private sector person that came to bail anyone out. This time it was the government bailing itself out. I understand. You're taking loans out on the national deficit. Well, whether you take a loan out on the national deficit or you borrow the money from a J.P. Morgan type individual, either way, the money has to be paid back. If the money's not spent, it doesn't matter who it comes from. It has to be divulged into. Now, I don't agree that the money was spent very well. But I also have to understand and take into account, ladies and gentlemen, I have to take into account that the private sector of the United States is where a majority of that money was filtered to. The beauty of the private sector is that it's protected by the idea of the free market economy that our conservative brethren in the United States of America, which I'm not against conservatives, I'm a moderate. I tend to be fiscally conservative, to be 100% totally honest with all of you. There are many things that the fiscal conservatives do that I like, and I agree with them, and I support them. But those are the same people that run the private sector. So we took bailout money and gave it to private sector people who probably voted against Barack Obama and then continued to get on their internet blogs, you know, internet tough guys, because there's a lot of internet tough guys that say the word coward a lot. You hear the word coward come out of the mouths of the Twitter feeds of a ton of conservatives in the United States of America. I hardly ever use the word coward unless I'm going to say it to somebody's face. There's no reason to call a person a coward unless you're going to say it to their face. But conservatives are internet tough. I get it. It's cool. I got it. You got camo. You guys got camo pants and guns. NRA. You got your NRA sticker and your camo pants. I get it. Makes you tough. I get it. I understand. So here's the thing. The bailout happens. They go up in arms. But then they're the ones who benefited heavily from the same type of bailout that a J.P. Morgan gives 100 years before to the United States government. And then they bitch about how, where did that money go? Well, it went to you guys. That's where it went. It's that idea, ladies and gentlemen, and you know the idea I'm talking about. I talked about it on the show before. Go listen to old episodes. I'm not going to get into it deeply, but it's that old idea of, let's say we lower taxes. And the argument from the conservatives is always, if we lower taxes, then that's going to save us money. And that money that we save off taxes each year that we don't have to pay to the federal government, we're going to turn around and we're going to hire two or three new individuals to their little salary positions within our company. And that's how we're going to benefit. We're going to create jobs that way. You lower our taxes, we're going to create jobs. No. No, it never happens that way. See, companies just run and run at the level that they run at currently. And what happens is at the end of the year, if they find out that they saved more tax money than they did the year before, they go, huh, we spent $30,000 less in taxes this year than we did last year. They shrug their shoulders and then they go right back to doing what they were doing. They don't run into any place screaming, get all the people together in here. Guys, we saved $30,000 in taxes. You know what that means? And everybody looks at each other and goes, a new employee is coming. Yes. Yes, it's going to happen. No, it never happens. That never happens. Nobody turns around and goes, hey, I saved $30,000 in taxes this year. Let's get a new employee. Let's pay for some of those benefits. Let's pay them a salary. Come on, let's do this. I'm excited. No, that never happens. bailout money comes. They get the bailout money and they go, eh, I can pay off that debt and that debt. Everything else, that was a debt I had regardless of whether the economy failed or not. I've had that debt for 10 plus years on this company. And I pay it monthly and I'm happy with that. Pocket the rest. Literally what happened. Private sector, ladies and gentlemen. Private sector. You know, it's funny, you learn a lot from watching these TV shows like this, Men Who Built America. William Jennings Bryant is one of the people that was a focal point of why the three big dogs, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Morgan, had to come together to buy the presidency for William McKinley. And the reason that they didn't like William Jennings Bryant is because he kept challenging the private sector and them directly and saying, how does a man who made $1 million in 1 year do it honestly? And that's an argument that I don't know if you can have anymore. 2012, that's a bit of an antiquated argument. But at the same point back then, I can completely understand it because of the value of what the money was worth. $1 million back in the 1890s. It's a lot of money, man. That's like the equivalent of like 60, 70 million in 1 year for one person. It's a lot of money. Even to this day, if somebody makes $60 million in a year, there's actors that don't make $60 million in 1 year at all. So that's a lot of money back then. And he's like, how did you do that honestly? And we know that you guys aren't trustworthy people. That's where antitrust came from and antitrust laws and things like that. I think a lot of that can still be said for today, but I think today people can get away with it. There's loopholes. There's a lot of loopholes. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break here on the show. And ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to finish up the queue. And it's going to be right in time for some Mizzou basketball. We'll be back on the queue after this.
One, two, three into the four. Marky Marky B is stepping to the door.
Yo, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the queue. Of course, Mark Bland joining you here on KYRO 1280 AM, WestplexNewsTalk.com. Don't forget to check out TheQNow.com every single week. Plus, don't forget replays on RadioFubar.com. You can follow them on Twitter at RadioFubar or RadioFubar.com. Tuesday nights, 10 Central Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central. The replay of The Q every single week. Enjoy that. Also, don't forget you can check out Savage Vibrations at awr.podomatic.com, Indio STL, a couple other places like that. I just did an interview this past week with my guys over at Turn the Radio Off. Mike Parsons, his buddy Kyle was out. So we were able to grab Olin Ezra, the home of the owner of Tap Detroit, which is the internet radio station in Detroit that plays the Mike Parsons show, Turn the Radio Off. And they interviewed me. Olin joined us halfway through. So if you get a chance, you want to go check out that. Search it up on Google's Turn the Radio Off. I think it's like ttroshow.com. WordPress.com, something like that. Don't quote me on that, but go look for Turn the Radio Off, or you can always go to theqnow.com, Breaking Point blog, and on the Breaking Point, there is a link to the show that I was specifically on with one Mike Parsons. Interesting show, very fun to listen to. I would heavily recommend it to all of you out there. I'm going to try to get some guys on from some different podcasts and shows. WFO, I want to get those guys on, some guys from Clutch and Wiggle. I'd like to get a few different people on. And I might even be having my guy. There was a few weeks ago I had the Drew guy from the one show over at Indio STL on. His producer, Jeremy, runs an MMA show on Indio STL, and I would like to try to get him on. Maybe we'll talk a little MMA for an entire hour or two here on the Q one afternoon. Get back to my MMA roots from when I did it for Fox Sports. But regardless of that, let's move on with today's show. Fake winning Powerball ticket goes viral on Facebook, proving once again, ladies and gentlemen, that users will share anything. That's right. Thursday evening, a Facebook user named Nolan Daniels posted a poorly photoshopped picture of his supposedly winning Powerball ticket, along with the offer that he would give $1 million to a random person who shared it. So far, it's been shared over 200,000 times, because the like-addled Facebook users will share anything, no matter how obviously untrue it is. That's right. So, We had that going on this past week. It's amazing. One of Daniel's friends asked if he was serious, and he replied, $239 million, I'm out celebrating now. He claims in the comments of the Facebook photo he was visiting a client in Fountain Hills, Arizona, when he bought the winning ticket. But you don't even have to examine the pixels to tell it's fake. While the numbers on Daniel's tickets do not match those that won, half of the record $587.5 million jackpot, they're not in numerical order. A real ticket would be from the Powerball frequently asked questions page on Powerball. People have reached out to Daniel to see why he isn't volunteering for charity or learning a second language, since he apparently has too much time on his hands now. Since the drawing, a couple in Missouri has been identified as the holders of one of the two winning tickets, which is crazy. That's crazy. Up by Kansas City. And, a six-year-old girl may get the pony she's been dreaming of. The Hill family of Dearborn, Missouri. One half of the jackpot, $587 million. And they have a six-year-old named Jaden who was adopted from China who wants a real pony. So, go buy him one. Or her one. I can't tell by the way that it's written here. But I would suggest you guys go do that. Let's do a quick letter from the listener. Might as well. Mark, big fan of the show. Even though I tend to be conservative and disagree with a lot of your views, I love it when you and Travis go toe-to-toe. It was really, really funny when you called conservatives pedophiles this past summer on the show, and Travis flipped out. The video still makes me laugh to this day. Well, first off, I did that on purpose to get a rise out of him. I do not believe that conservatives are pedophiles by any means. I'm sure there are conservatives out there that are pedophiles, but then there's also liberals and crazy just whack jobs that are pedophiles. So I'm not going to stand by the claim of that show when I was in the middle of reading that story about O'Fallon, Missouri, that that they were conservatives specifically and conservatives are pedophiles. That is not true. But it did get a rise out of Travis. It was hilarious to watch, and I do agree. Thank you so much. It was fun to watch him. We love having Travis on the show, although Travis 100% disagrees with everything. Travis had a Facebook argument with me earlier this week where he's so regressive, just like the rest of them. He's so regressive in his viewpoints that he actually still tries to use television shows from the 1960s and 70s as arguments to why there's a liberal media bias. Does he not understand that the 1970s was like 40 years ago and a much different time period in history with a lot of different ideas and thoughts and processes going on? We were coming straight out of the Vietnam War and other things like he doesn't understand. Anyway, just crazy to me. So I love Travis, but let's get back into this. Mark, my whole life I've really had bad eyes, but today I woke up with perfect vision. It freaked me out, and I only had to realize that I'd forgotten to remove my contacts the night before I went to bed. What has been the biggest accident letdown of your life? I had had a conversation. I had gone into a interview, and this is before the end of the show here. I had gone into an interview for a radio job in another city in the state of Missouri. And the job came, or the conversation was great. It sounded like they were going to hire me to do mornings at the station. And it wasn't too far of a drive from my house. It was like out to middle Missouri. And I knew for the first few weeks I was going to have to drive it before I could get like set up out there with a place. So based off the conversation and like a subsequent email after the fact, I thought that I had had the job, that I was starting on Monday. I show up at the station. The station manager looks at me and goes, "Why are you here?" And I'm like, "Well, here's the email and this, that, and the other, and blah, 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 blah." And come to find out that somebody who was a disgruntled employee he was having dealings with also had access, a business partner had access to his email and had sent that out to me. And I didn't necessarily get the job. I did do a good job showing, but in the long run, I didn't get the job. But it was a huge letdown to me because I really thought it could have been a great job for me, and I thought that I could have excelled at it heavily. So regardless, I'm here. Here's the queue. And by the way, don't forget to check out thequeuenow.com. Old episodes of the show, new episodes of the show coming up, the Breaking Point blog, as well as a little bit about myself, Justing, my normal co-host. He wasn't here this week, but that's okay. We had Rob step in. Anyway, it's time for us to get out of here on KYRO 1280 AM. It's time for some Mizzou basketball. We'll be back next time on the queue. God bless the United States of America. God bless every single one of you. My name is Mark Bland. You're welcome. That's all I can say. Solutions left but on died. Trying to block my shot just ain't gonna happen, so don't try. Every time I get on this microphone, I like to spit. And get hit up after hit. This chemistry is so legit. I can't be equipped like a prophylactic. Now they riding dicks. Like styling only suckers out here trying to buy their bitch. Now they rich. Try convince everybody.